All right, let me pray as we get started with gracious words. Oh, our kind King, as we think about just growing in gracious speech, the way that you speak graciously of us is just staggering, Lord. And so as we think about your speech and your words, may it just stir us up to, oh, I want to look like that. I want to look like that. And so would you use this time just to help us think that through and help us think about applying it and then to glorify you as we put it into practice. Please, Lord, that's what we're asking. Thank you. Amen. Okay, so we're going to talk about gracious words, growing and communicating like God. Gracious. When you hear gracious, the word gracious, what words come to your mind? Kind. Humility. Compassionate, I think I heard over here. Thoughtful. Yeah. Like if that were true of our speech, we'd be good with that, wouldn't we? Kind, compassionate. I forget what the other two were, but humble. Right? We'd be good with that. Dictionaries use definitions like pleasantly kind, benevolent, courteous, speech that's appealing and inviting. In Luke 7:9, we're told that people, listen to this, Luke 7:9, we're told that people were amazed at the gracious words that came from Jesus' lips. Like, it wasn't just your ordinary, run-of-the-mill, everyday kind of like pleasantries, apparently, because they wouldn't have been amazed at ordinary, run-of-the-mill, everyday, how are you, I'm fine, da-da-da-da-da-da. They were amazed at the gracious words that came from his lips. It's like, oh, wow, wow, okay, how can I grow in that? So as we counsel and communicate with others, may we be reflections of that. If we're going to be reflections of that, we're going to have to cultivate our hearts. We know that out of the heart, the mouth speaks. So if we want to speak gracious words, the only way for that to happen is to have a gracious heart. Luke 6:45, a good person produces good things from the treasury of a good heart, and an evil person produces evil things from the treasury of an evil heart. What you say flows from what is in your heart. So, let me illustrate that for you. Let's say that Jana and I, not here, but so we'll talk about her behind her back, both have the same issue logging into an online platform, and so we have to contact customer service to get help. We both get the same result. Customer service wasn't able to immediately solve our problem. You hear us talk about our phone call afterwards. Janet says this: those folks in customer service are working so hard. Can you imagine what it must be like? Can you imagine what it must be like for them when, through no fault of their own, they're now expected to solve computer issues for all of us? What a hard job. I am praying God will help them. That's how Janet responds. Then you hear me after my customer experience. Those folks in customer service are clueless. They kept me on hold for 30 minutes, and then they still didn't fix the issue. They just gave me the rehearsed apology they trained customer service reps to give, and they told me they were sorry for the inconvenience. Then they suggested I call back in an hour. When I asked if there was a direct number I could call so I didn't have to spend 30 minutes in the queue again, they just said they had to take phone calls in the order they were received. They were useless. Same phone call, same experience, two different hearts, right? So what do you learn about Janet's heart based on how she talked about her customer service experience? Other-centered. I think, did I hear somebody say she was humble? Gracious. She spends time with the Lord. She's got a heart that's gracious because that's what's coming out of her mouth. Okay, what do you learn about my heart based on how I talk about the same customer service experience. It is all about me, baby. You got it, right? Right? That's what my description was. How I was inconvenienced, how they just gave me this platitude, how they weren't going to bump me up to the front of the line when I called back. And I would venture to say that when you hear someone speak about someone else, you learn a whole lot more about the person who is speaking than you learn about the person about whom they are speaking. You would never know that Janet was put on hold for 30 minutes and the problem didn't get solved. Here's what you would know. Janet's kind, she's gracious, she cares more about the souls of people than she does about being able to perform tasks. When you listen to me, you would learn that I care a lot about myself. And I think I deserve to be served when I want to be served. My concern is about me, not about others. And while I might occasionally be able to fake what is in my heart, most often the only way for gracious words to come out of my mouth is if, by God's grace, I am cultivating a gracious heart. Now, we could jump into the Bible anywhere since it's all God's words, and God is a gracious, loving, and compassionate God, but I picked out some areas that are convicting and helpful to me. So if you guys don't get anything out of this, I'm getting something out of it, okay? These passages have helped me see what a gracious heart is like and have convicted me that my heart is often not that. It's been helpful for me to see what I need to be thinking and treasuring in my heart if I ever hope to have gracious words flowing from my mouth. So, meditate on and point out what others are doing right if you want gracious words to come out of your mouth. In 1 Corinthians 13, we hear these words from God, which came from his heart through Paul. Verse 5, love does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no records of wrongs. Now, I want to look at a specific example of how a heart that does not dishonor others or keep a record of wrongs was put into practice in God's speech. We're going to look at Hebrews 11. That chapter is often referred to as what? The Hall, the Hall of Faith, right? So, in your notes, look down column 1. You see all those names in column 1? Are there names on there that seem a bit out of place? Like, if you were nominating people for the Hall of Faith, are those the people that you would have nominated? Are there any people whose names are on that list who, like, shock you a little bit? Like, you made it to the Hall of Faith? So, as we look at each person mentioned in this chapter, ask yourself, if God kept a record of wrongs, if he dishonored others, what would we expect to hear in this chapter? So I think in Hebrews 11, we see a glorious demonstration of gracious words. There are only a few names on this list, Abel, Enoch, Joseph, Moses' parents, and Samuel, about whom the Bible records little, if anything, negative. For each of the rest, we have a record of some character flaw or significant sin in their life. If God kept a record of wrongs, if he dishonored others, think about what we might expect to hear in this chapter. So let's go through it. The first person that we see in this Hall of Fame is, oh, okay, you've got that, is us. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command so that what is seen was not what was not made out of what was visible. Does it blow you away that the first person mentioned in the Hall of Faith is us? I've read that chapter I don't know how many times, and it never sank in that us are included in that chapter. I just jumped down to Abel. It's like, wait, that starts with us. Now, what is not said here about us? A whole lot. Yeah, no room. A whole lot. Okay. Well, one of the things that is not said about us is what we find in Romans 3.